Good morning. I'm delighted to see you all here for the wrap-up of our Enneagram class this spring. We have learned so much together about the Enneagram. And to cap off this season, we have invited the Reverend Dr. Chris Copeland to be our speaker today. He's going to be speaking on Enneagram practices or spiritual practices with your Enneagram type. Chris is a professor at the Wake Forest Divinity School here in town, and he also has just written a book with Sandra Smith and has a few copies here. It's called The Heart of the Enneagram, A Companion for Deepening Personal and Spiritual Growth. So please, let's welcome Chris.
Thanks, Sarah. Good morning. Can y'all hear me okay? All right, good. Hey, Carol. Carol's one of my students. Two things I will say. First is thank you for inviting me, Sarah, and for having me here. And I'm sorry I missed you all last week. I heard it was a little warm in the building, so it was probably not the best time to come and talk about the Enneagram. And then also, you all now have sat through a couple of months of learning about the Enneagram, right? So you're experts. Right? Okay. No? Okay. Well, today, what I want to do with you is begin to apply some of the learning about the nine types with spiritual practices. That's really our goal today. So to start with, I'm going to just sort of get a sea of hands just for fun. So how many of you out there understand yourselves to, and I'll use the words lead with, but what's your primary Enneagram type or your home base? Who identify as one out there? How many ones? Okay, great. How about twos? A couple of twos. All right, how about threes? Maybe. Okay, how about four? Oh, there. Yeah, there's a couple of, I'm a four as well. What about fives? Any fives in here? Great. Sixes? Oh, look at all the hands go up. St. Paul's is full of sixes, is my understanding. All right, sevens. Oh, wow. Thanks for being here. All right, eights. Okay, and nine. Great, beautiful. Gaggle of nines over there. Good. As I mentioned, I lead with type four. And so my work at the Divinity School, I teach courses in spirituality of the Enneagram. And in my particular interest is in spiritual practices. And I'll talk about this in a little bit. But knowing our type really is the first step. If we stop there, then we really can't grow. We need to learn to engage in some practices that help us break those habits and patterns that we find ourselves in. So before we begin, though, I want to do a moment of centering. So I'm going to sit, and I'm going to invite you to just, if you're willing, to put your feet on the floor and just feel yourself supported in the chair. And I like to engage this material with the Enneagram with a curious mind. Can I be curious about what's coming? An open heart and a grounded body or grounded presence. So I want to start this as a way we can just hear and engage this material, trying to open all three centers, our head, our heart, and our body, in just a little bit of silence. So if you'll join me. Amen. Thank you. So you've seen this figure before. This is a stylized version of it that I use. These names on the Enneagram, you may have learned slightly different ones. Some of them, there are two primary schools of thought, and so some of these names may be slightly different. But this is basically the Enneagram symbol and the nine types. So did y'all talk about at all the three centers of intelligence? Did y'all talk about that much? Okay, so I'm going to mention this because the Enneagram is broken into three centers of intelligence. So there are three triads, which I'll talk about in just a second. It's broken into three. So, for example, we have what are called body types, eights, nines, and ones across the top of the Enneagram here. This is called the instinctual center. These types who are in the body types are concerned with power and control. So where is power? Where is control? They all do this a little bit differently. And the emotional experience is anger. Now, again, it's going to be different for each type. For example, an eight is more likely to express anger. A one is more likely to repress anger. And a nine is going to deny that they have any anger at all. But anger is sort of, it's the core emotional experience of these body types, okay? So, and then their heart types, these are twos, threes, and fours. This is the emotional center. Again, it doesn't mean that everybody doesn't have emotions or everybody doesn't have instincts, but it's just sort of the home for these types. They're concerned with affection and esteem. How do people perceive me? Am I getting affection? What's people's sense of who I am? And their emotional experience is distress, sometimes called shame, but there's just sort of this, a primary is distress. Again, it's expressed differently. Threes don't often know that they go to distress because they're so busy moving that they don't stop and pay attention, whereas fours might live in distress quite a bit, for example. All right? And then we have head types, which are five, sixes, and sevens. This is the intellectual center. That means they spend a lot of time in their mind. They're concerned with safety and security. So each of these types are really concerned and thinking about, am I safe, what's secure, et cetera. And their primary emotional experience is fear. All right, so fear comes out differently for five, sixes, and sevens, but they all have fear underneath. Because you'll see a seven and you'll think, do they have any fear? Because they're sort of happy-go-lucky, right? But there is fear underneath that, which is fear of limitation, for example. All right, so I want to share these with you because I want you to pay attention to these particularly, power and control, affection and esteem, safety and security, because we're going to return back to those, all right? So that just gives you an overview of this, what's called the three centers of intelligence on the Enneagram. So I also want to give you, just as a handle, to kind of get you back into the thinking about the Enneagram, the motivation and focus of attention. So the Enneagram really measures motivation. This is really important. It's not about behavior. We tend to look at people and say, that person is behaving in a certain way, they must be a type, whatever. And what I really want to emphasize is, what the Enneagram is looking at is, what's the underlying motivation, what's the why. So these are one way to think about the motivations of the nine types, as a way to think about it. So if you think you're here somewhere on this, I'm not going to read all of these, but if you see yourself on here, think about continue longing. Is that my motivation? Does that make sense for me? The one to reform and improve. Is that primarily what my motivation is? For the seven, to be simulated. Is that my primary motivation? Okay? And I'll offer any, so take a glance at that. And then offer one more, which I think can be also even more revealing, is focus of attention, which is, where does our attention go? Where does our default automatic attention go? And this is what David Daniels would say, who's a mentor of mine, would say, where our attention goes, energy follows. Okay, so where is our attention? One's attention is seeing error. That's the default attention. Two, other people's needs. Three, things to do, things to accomplish. Four, seeing what's missing. That's the default attention. Intrusion, who's going to come intrude in on my space or my energy or my time, the five says. Six, worst case scenario, that's just the natural focus of attention. Seven, pleasant options. What are the pleasant possibilities? Eight, power and control. Nine, other people's agendas. That's the default of where the focus goes. All right, does that make sense? So it just kind of gets us back into these nine types. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about spiritual growth now that we have this Enneagram as a base. So knowing our type, as I mentioned, is really just the first step. What the Enneagram does is it cultivates a sense of awareness. We begin to realize, oh, I have these habits. Oh, I have these patterns. Great, I'm aware of them. But just being aware doesn't allow us to grow. I mean, there's a little bit of growth in that, but we do sort of next steps in order to change. So learning the Enneagram wakes us up, as I mentioned, of these habits and patterns. And then to grow, we must pair this awareness with some kind of practice. In this context, we talk about it as spiritual practices. But we have to do some kind of practice which allows us to not fall into those habits and patterns. Does that make sense? We have to try. We got to practice. There's a moment in our reactivity where we can stop and say, I'm going to do that differently. Viktor Frankl talks about it this way. He says, there's a moment, there's a space between stimulus and response. Part of what the Enneagram does is help us increase that space a little bit so that we have stimulus before we respond or react. And what practices do is create a big old space between that stimulus and that response so that we can choose our response, not just react. All right? So this is my definition of Christian spiritual practices. Spiritual practices are activities we engage in fully with our heart, mind, and body, all three centers, heart, mind, body, with the intention to be present to and to grow in relationship with God, self, and others, and all of creation, and that transform us into the likeness of Christ. How about that for a divinity school definition, right? There's a lot of pieces in that. I don't need to unpack it all, but this is one way to think about it. It's about growing in relationship with God, self, others, and creation, being present to God, being present to ourselves, being present to others, so that we can be transformed into the likeness of Christ. So, why do we engage in spiritual practices? A couple of thoughts about that. It helps us pay attention to the presence and love of God that's all around us. They remind us of who we are. We're all made in the image of God, right? In that language, imago Dei, we're all created in the image of God. We all bear the imprint, that divine indwelling, as Richard Rohr would say. They help us deepen our relationship with God, and they help us break the habits and patterns of our personality so we're not beholden to our ego. So what if we bring some of these things together, spiritual practices and knowing our type? So by bringing together the awareness of our Enneagram type and various spiritual practices, what we do is we interrupt our habits and patterns, and we become more free, living as our fullest and deepest selves. So these practices interrupt. Awareness does the first interruption, and then the practices begin to open that space. Any questions so far? All right, so I'm going to share with you what's my ideas about nine practices for each of the nine types, which help do exactly this, to broaden that space, to open that space between stimulus and reactivity, because we all live in reactivity. So how can we open that space so that reactivity becomes response? Now, what I will say up front is that these are my ideas. And I'll tell you why I think they can be helpful. And if you identify as a certain type and you say, that practice doesn't work with me, that's cool. Or if you say a different practice works better for me, that's great. So these are just ideas to help you think about this, all right? So we'll start with eight, as I mentioned, the body type. So I call all of these practices prayer with something. So the eight is prayer with stillness. I'll unpack that in a moment to tell you what that means. The nine is praying with attention. One, praying with acceptance. Two, praying with nature. Three, praying with rest. Five, praying with gratitude. Sorry, that's four, praying with gratitude. Five, praying with movement. The fives are like, what? Six, praying with the body. And seven, praying with limitation. So these are the fun names that I give these, and then each of these is a Christian practice that's rooted in some of them ancient, some of them more modern. All right, so that gives you a sense of those, what these practices might be. So let's start with the body triad, as I mentioned. Everybody remember what the body triad is concerned with? Power and control, right? Okay. So type eight, praying with stillness, centering prayer. Folks in here know what centering prayer is? Okay, it's a kind of meditation. I'll say more about that in a minute. Type nine, praying with attention, is something called the awareness examine. You guys ever heard of the awareness examine? Ignatius comes out of Ignatius of Loyola, exactly. And type one, praying with acceptance, is the welcoming prayer. Anybody know what the welcoming prayer? Anybody experience that? Okay, great. Well, you're gonna hear a little bit about each of these three. So I'm gonna share a little bit more about each of these in just a moment. And we'll have a chance to practice. All right, so let's unpack these one by one. So type eight, praying with stillness, is centering prayer. And in centering prayer, what we do is we have a sacred word, and that word represents our intention to consent to the action and presence of God, okay? So it's a kind of meditation, and the sacred word calls us back to our intention. People who've developed this, Thomas Keating being the primary one, but there's others who've written about it since then, talk about the difference between intention and attention. In Eastern meditation and most meditation practices, including mindfulness, the focus is attention. How do you draw your attention in, or how do you attend, have your attention toward a candle or whatever it is? In centering prayer, it's intention. What is my intention to be present to consent to the presence and action of God in my life, okay? So that's just in a nutshell. And there are four R's: resist no thought, retain no thought, react to no thought, and return gently to the sacred word. So this is not a class in centering prayer, because we could do 50 minutes in centering prayer, but I'm just giving you an overview of it, all right? So here's why I think this prayer can be helpful for the eight, the gifts for type eight. It helps the eight practice surrender, letting go of control, vulnerability, because every time that a thought comes and you speak that word, it's a letting go. You're letting go of whatever thought that is, whatever I need to do this, or I'm pissed off about this, or whatever comes up. The sacred word is a surrender. It's a letting go. And this is not easy for eights to do. And so this is a good invitation for them to come to a place of vulnerability, to let go, to surrender. It helps the eight to recognize the power of contained energy. So eights have a lot of externalized or big energy, and that's a lovely thing, and it's a beautiful thing. And also, there's powerfulness in containing one's energy as well, and knowing when to give the amount of energy in what context, okay? And it relaxes the dualistic thinking that eights tend to do. Eights tend to think right or wrong, black or white. So it allows the eight to see the world with fresh eyes. After you do centering prayer, there's a softening, and you come out and you sort of see things with through innocence, through softer eyes. There's no more sort of dualistic ways. All right? Questions about that? Praying with stillness? Where are my eights? Anybody does centering prayer? Yeah. Have you found it helpful? Yeah. Great. Was there anybody else? Okay. Good. So we'll move on to type nine, praying with attention. So this is called the awareness examine, or sometimes just called the examine. Comes out of Ignatian spirituality. Praying with over the events of life is what awareness examine does. So you may do this at the end of a day, you may do it at the end of a week, but you're praying through the events of your life. And you're noticing moments of gratitude, of grace, of energy, of aliveness, of passion. As well as times that are difficult and draining and difficult to notice the presence of God. So you're doing both of these things. And we're paying attention to God's desire for us. Underneath the idea of awareness examine is that God calls us more and more to life. God calls us to energy. God calls us to be alive. God calls us to those places where we feel gratitude. That may be different from somehow. I grew up Southern Baptist, and the premise was, if it feels good, God must not want you to do it. Some version thereof. This prayer really says, if you feel alive, if doing this thing makes you feel alive, then that may be God calling you, beckoning you to do more of that, okay? So that's the general idea of awareness examine. Here are some of the gifts for type nine. It helps the nine wake up and pay attention to who he is and what is important to him. So nines struggle to figure out what's important to me, what matters to me. And so this helps the nine wake up to that, because as you pray this prayer over and over, and I recommend people do it every single day, you begin to notice patterns of where you feel alive, what energizes you. Oh, this is important to me. This matters to me. The opposite is true as well, which is what's not important to you. Because sometimes nines will go along to get along. We know this. And so nines will go with things, even though it's not very much fun or they don't really enjoy it. So it helps them wake up to that as well. It encourages the nine to move from slothfulness. You've maybe heard that word, the passion or the vice of the nine, about self-discovery. So slothfulness doesn't mean laziness, like I'm lazy. It means I'm lazy about paying attention to myself and what's important to me and what matters to me. So it helps this nine move from a slothfulness about self-discovery to action, moving toward action, responding to what really matters. So as I discover what really matters to me, then it frees me up to go and do action. So the awareness examine helps us become aware of what's important to me, where am I energized, what matters to me, and that helps the nine wake up and interrupt that pattern, okay? Where are my nines? We have a bunch of them over here. Anybody ever practiced the examine in this group? Yeah? Has it been, have you found it helpful?
Great.
Had experience with both. Good, good. So centering prayer has been helpful. Good, excellent. All right, so we'll go on to type one, and we're going to talk about praying with acceptance. And this is called the welcoming prayer. This comes out of the centering prayer tradition. The way this works is we welcome physical and emotional sensations in reaction to situations. So when we react, we find ourselves reacting emotionally, or if we have a physical sensation, it's a matter of welcoming that. This is incredibly counterintuitive to probably all of us. Why the heck would we welcome those things, right? There are three movements to this prayer. The first one is focus and sink in. So we focus on whatever that sensation is. If it's an emotional sensation, we actually try to locate it in the body. So if it's fear, where am I feeling that in my body? If it's anger, if it's joy, gratitude, whatever, where is that in my body? So we focus and we sink into that feeling. Then we welcome it and we say, welcome grief, welcome grief, welcome grief, welcome grief. And then we let it go. So there is this, again, this is sort of, we are not enculturated I would imagine most of you, including myself, have some resistance to this idea. One thing to keep in mind is in the welcoming prayer, we're not saying welcome to bad things, but all we're doing is acknowledging the sensation, the feeling, the sensation that we're having, okay? So the gift of this for type one is it helps the one welcome emotional reactivity. So we all have emotional reactivity, and once in particular, the way that shows up is frustration, anger. A lot of ones will say, I'm not angry, but they'll say, I get frustrated, or I get irritated, or I feel resentful, some version thereof, but underneath that is anger. So sort of welcoming that so that it can be let go. So I think part of what happens for ones is they tend to hold a lot of that in their bodies. And if ones can begin to allow themselves to welcome whatever that is, that sense of resentment or anger, focus and sink in, welcome, and then let go, it can allow themselves to relax a little bit. Their body can ease a little bit. Because here's, Richard Rohr makes this famous, but this is what he says, what we resist will persist. This is the magic, to use that word, of welcoming prayer, is that if we stop resisting, it actually frees up energy. But we spend a lot of our time resisting. I don't want to feel sadness. I don't want to be present to my grief or whatever it is, my anger, frustration, whatever, okay? So it reduces tension and frees up energy, and then it can bring a sense of calm and serenity. Serenity is the virtue of the one, which is just accepting things as they are. I look around, and the world isn't imperfect. The world isn't full of errors. It just is. This is just what it is. It's a kind of acceptance. All right? So I know I've got Sarah. Sarah?
It really resonates. And it's ironic because I met with my spiritual director last week, and I was talking about a problem that I was really angry about. Mm-hmm. He was like, you should try the welcoming prayer.
Nice. I don't know who your spiritual director is, so. It's not an easy task. It's a really challenging. It is very, very challenging. I want to acknowledge that for sure. And it's something we just practice. It's why it's called a practice, because we practice it. We try. We show up and we do the best we can, and then we try up and we show the best we can again. All right? Are there any other ones? Yeah. Any resonance there with you as you hear this? Okay. Great. All right. So what I'd like to do we're going to actually do a practice, because I don't want to talk to you the whole time, because that's boring. So we're going to do this practice. It's called the awareness exam. And so I'm going to lead you through it. We're going to do it all in about 2 minutes, very quickly. But I want you to have those of you who haven't experienced it, to have an experience of the awareness exam. I should say this, by the way. I'm going to give you 9 different practices. I also want to say that the 3 that I've just covered, so acceptance, attention, and stillness, those practices are foundational for all of us. They really are. They are foundational for all of us. I want to encourage you all to practice, particularly the idea of centering prayer, stillness, silence, all that. It grounds us and opens us. But I think all 3 of these practices are foundational, so I would encourage you to do all of them. But the 8s, 9s, and 1s have it easy because it's just their home base, right? I'm kidding. Okay, so if you will, again, if you'll just put your feet on the floor, you may want to close your eyes. If that doesn't feel safe or comfortable, then just soften your eyes so that you have a soft focus, a soft gaze. And we're going to use our imaginations just a little bit. So if you will, take a deep breath. And just notice that you are seated in the chair, that you're held by the chair, you're held by your feet on the floor. Just notice your breathing for a moment. And now in your mind's eye, I invite you to think back about yesterday. Yesterday was Saturday. And just maybe as a kind of a slideshow, or maybe as words, could be images, just kind of rehearse in your mind some things that happened yesterday, whatever comes up. Then I want to invite you to ask the question, for what am I most grateful yesterday? Where did I feel most alive? Where was it easy to tend to or notice the presence of God? And see what comes up as you ask that question to yourself. Where did I feel alive? For what am I most grateful? Where did I notice the presence of God? See what may come up for you. And in a similar way, I invite you to ask the other question, which is, where did I feel drained yesterday? For what am I least grateful? Where was it hard to notice God's presence? Ask those questions and see what comes up. Drained, least grateful, difficult to notice God's presence. Now, in your own way, if you will, just offer a word of thanks to God for this day, that day, Saturday, and all that came up. And as you're ready, I invite you to come back and open your eyes and return back to this space. And if you will take just about a minute and a half and turn to a neighbor and just talk about what you noticed in that prayer. In that practice. Whatever came up for you. What did you notice? Whatever you feel comfortable sharing, talk to your neighbor. Ready, go. Okay. All right. Any thanks? Hey. Yeah. Good to see you. Of course. Good to see you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So anybody want to share anything? Anything you noticed in that prayer? In the examine? Boy, y'all have good energy. I love it. I love it. Anybody, Sarah, will you do me a favor? I passed out these on this side. Will you pass everybody else? Yeah, that's great. All right, anybody have anybody noticing about the awareness exam and about that practice? Anybody want to offer a noticing? No? No noticings? Was it helpful? Was it weird? Was it Oh, that was insightful. Anything? Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Good. So you have to sort of, sometimes you go straight to a certain particular stimulating piece or whatever. Right. Yep. Yeah, good. Good. Good awareness. Great. Anyone else? Hopefully I have enough copies. I made 50 copies, but... Any extra pieces of paper? Anybody else have any extra? Oh, there's some. Yeah, there's a few here. There's a couple. So just to name what's on this piece of paper, you don't have to look at it this moment. I wanted you to give you a takeaway. So on that first side that you got is a way to practice the examine. So if this is something you're not familiar with and you want to go and try, what I recommend to do this is you might try it at the end of every day, or if that feels overwhelming, you might try it every other day, or you might try it 3 days a week or whatever. But at the end of your day, use this practice. On the other side of that page is a description of centering prayer and a description of the welcoming prayer. Because of our time today, we won't be able to do those, but I wanted you to have some examples of how you might pray that welcoming prayer. And if we have time, I may talk a little bit more about that, because that's a little bit of a tricky one, all right? But there's centering prayer as well. I want you to have those resources. All right, so we're going to move on to, because I want to get everybody in, to the heart triad. Type 2, praying with nature, is what I call a nature prayer. Type 3, praying with rest, is Sabbath. And type 4 is praying with gratitude, is a gratitude prayer, okay? So praying with nature, type 2. So here's how that prayer might look. We're paying attention to creation. We're paying attention to the God incarnate in all things. Remember, God creates all things, and God is present in all things. God is incarnate. So can we notice the presence of God in all of creation? We love nature for nature's sake. Our tendency around nature, around creation, is to see how we can use it. Can we simply be present to it and love it simply for its own sake? That's part of what this practice does. We're recognizing our location in the vastness of creation. So there's a humility that comes where we're like, oh my gosh, have y'all ever experienced that? Where you've been somewhere, even maybe standing on the edge of an ocean or in some woods or on a mountaintop or somewhere, and you realize, oh my gosh, I am so small compared to all of this vastness of creation. Not small in a bad way, but small in a, I'm just one piece of this greater whole. And this can be a beautiful practice for us. So that's somehow we do it. Here's some of why the gifts are for the type 2. There are no human needs in nature. And remember, twos are focused on the needs of others. Now, it may be true that if you're hiking the Appalachian Trail, you may run into somebody and they have a need, right? But the idea is nature in and of itself, there are no human needs. And that can free up and may create anxiety for the two as well. Being present to nature allows the two to just receive its beauty. So remember, twos have a hard time receiving. They give. So can a two just simply receive the beauty of what's in front of them? It's a great practice for a two. And it cultivates humility, as I mentioned, as we are in the vastness of creation. Oh, the whole world won't go to hell if I don't do my part, right? There's something that creates a humility in the two that says, if I'm not helping, it all just won't go to pot. Okay? Does that make sense? Where are my twos? Yeah, it's some resonance there? Okay. Oh, interesting. That's interesting. So tell me your name.
Ashley.
Ashley says that I begin seeing the needs of nature.
Cutting trees, going to the driving down, I-95 to Charleston, or the West of Savannah, and just mowing down trees.
Right.
All of that. And then, so that
sure. That's good. That's a good awareness. So if there are ways we can be in nature where we can not notice the needs necessarily, that's tricky. I hear that. Yeah, good. It's a great, thank you. Thank you. All right, so we're going to move on to type 3, praying with rest. Sabbath, so remembering that rest creates creation. So you all may know that how many days of creation are there in Genesis? Well, actually there are 7, Because it's the text says, on the seventh day, God rested and creation was completed. So rest is actually part of creation. But we threes, I'm not a three, but those of us who are threes, we forget that, that rest is part of the created order. So recognizing that creation is only completed when we rest. It acknowledges the natural rhythm of life. So life is doing and resting and doing and resting and doing and resting. And trusting the universe will continue without our efforts. Threes don't always recognize that, right? That's part of practice. So I'm not telling you what the actual practice is, but for example, for Sabbath, you might take 25 hours, which is the traditional Sabbath, sundown to an hour after sundown, and say, I'm not going to do anything. And you can decide what that is. My practice when I do it, which I don't do well, I'm a four with a three wing, so this is a good practice for me, is I say no screens, no work, no chores. What else? I think that's basically it. So I can read, I can hang out with friends, I can go for a walk, but that's it for 25 hours. So that can be an example of what Sabbath practice might be. Now, for some threes, that makes them panicky, what I just said. So you may find just 2 hours in the day where you do Sabbath practice. All right, so here are some gifts for the three. It gives the three space to claim that she is loved for who she is, not for what she does, not for what she accomplishes. So remember, sort of threes think, I'm only loved because of what I do, because of what I accomplish. That's how I know I'm loved, because I get this. Good job, Chris, right? So if you're in Sabbath, you're not doing anything. So I tell threes, if you practice Sabbath, you can't tell anybody you're practicing it. Because underneath it is you want someone to say, oh, good for you. Or some version of, you have the best Sabbath practice, right? You can't tell people, you just got to do it. And it helps the three stop and see the truth of who she really is without projected images and masks. So, you know, threes project images and they have masks that they wear in different places. So just by resting, by being, not performing, you can become more aware of who is that core self that's not just projecting an image, not just playing, performing a role. Again, this will create some anxiety. Every one of these practices is intended to make you uncomfortable. Because we don't grow unless there's some discomfort that comes. But we have to be willing to sort of show up and keep trying. All right? All right, three, where are my threes? How's rest for you? Rest. Sabbath. Is it easy for you to do? Okay, good, good. I have some other threes. Okay. Okay. Okay, all right, good. All right, good. All right, so let's move on to four, praying with gratitude. So I call this the gratitude prayer, recognizing the gift of every moment, every experience, every person. Every moment, every gift, every experience is just gift. Can I recognize that? Looking for the good. Ah, this is great for the four, right? What's the good in this? What's already there? It's both a response and a choice. This is good for fours to learn. We're responding to, how many of us have ever experienced something and you go, oh, my heart is just so full of gratitude. There's this natural response to something. Yeah, some point in your life, I imagine you felt that. It's also true that gratitude can be a gift. We can choose to look for the things that we're grateful for. It rewires our brain. This is the other thing I haven't said, but the Enneagram actually rewires our brains, and these practices do too. Cynthia Bourgeau, by the way, if you want a great book on centering prayer, this book called Heart of Centering Prayer, the subtitle is Non-Dual Christianity in Theory and Practice. She talks about how we rewire neural pathways by doing these practices. And part of it is also true by understanding the Enneagram. So it's both a response and a choice. So here are some of the gifts of this gratitude prayer for the four. The first is it shifts attention from what's missing to what's present, to what's good, to what's complete. These things, it's already good. It's already complete. It shifts that attention away from what's missing because remember, us fours go to what's missing. It notices our own giftedness, our own completeness, our own wholeness. Nothing's missing in us. Again, at our core, we force think there's something fundamentally missing. A gratitude practice helps us begin to realize, oh, we're already whole. We're already complete. And it brings the four out of fantasy and into the present. Because if you're grateful for what is, it's hard to be fantasizing either about what could be one day or rehashing the sadness of what happened in the past, for example. It brings us to the present. And actually, every single one of these practices brings us to the present. This present moment is where there's great liberation and freedom. More we spend in the future or in the past, the more we're trapped. Okay? Where are my fours? Yes. Beautiful. Gratitude is the father of all other virtues. Lovely. Thank you. All right. I know some of you need to go to worship, so I'm going to cover the last three. And those of you who want to stay, we can talk some more. All right. So the head triad, type five, is praying with movement. I call this walking meditation. It could also be this beautiful labyrinth you have here on your floor. Type six, praying with the body, doing a body prayer. We can talk about what that is. And type seven, praying with limitation. I know the sevens, even the name of it makes them anxious, but is fasting. This is not a contemporary practice that many of us do.
I don't understand what praying with limitation
is. It means that there are limits. I'm setting limits, intentionally setting limits. That's a good thing, right, Todd?
I don't do it.
Exactly. That's my point. Exactly. So type five, praying with movement. So we talk about walking meditation. Again, this could be a labyrinth is a great tool, but if you don't have a labyrinth, you can do this as a intentional walking meditation practice. So it allows the mind to slow while the body is moving. So as you move with intention, and again, it could be on this path or it could be around my neighborhood, it allows the mind to slow. Something shifts when I walk with intention. And remember, fives are in their five, six, and sevens. Their heads are going quick. It's going with the energy of the body. So you're actually going with the energy of the body. This is good for fives, too. It invites us to pay attention to ourselves and the world around us. So interestingly enough, when we're walking meditation, we're paying attention to self, but we're also attuned to what's going on around us. It encourages a walk to become a metaphor for the spiritual journey. So, and again, as you walk a labyrinth and you do walking meditation, it becomes a metaphor for the spiritual journey. So here are some of the gifts for five in this movement. It helps the five become fully present. You hear me say that again, present, present, present. And engaged rather than observing from a distance. So fives tend to observe from a distance. Can I be engaged? Can I be present as I walk? Invites the five to move outward, to receive energy and resources. So if I move outward, because the five's always like, I'm going to hold them tight. But if I move outward, I can receive energy and resources from the world in my walking. It allows the five to recognize that she is not separate from God or from anything she needs. This is, again, kind of the thought of the five is, I'm separated from the resources that I need. And this walk can help us feel connected to God and to know that I have access to all the resources that I need. All right, type six, praying with the body. Body prayer, moving our bodies to connect with deeper wisdom. There's a prayer practice that I could teach you. There's a lot of body prayer practices, but I'll show you one really quick. It goes like this. You start with your hands here. You bow. You go to hands here. This is a receptive place. You move hands here, which is maybe a gratitude place or a place of cherishing or holding. And then you move hands to here, which is a place of letting go or releasing. It's that simple. But being in my body can shift. So if a bow, hands open, hands to heart, releasing. Okay. Inviting God, the God of incarnation, to speak to us through our bodies. So you may know this, that our bodies are actually the first places that know information. Our heads are the last. Goes body, heart, head. That's how we know. But we don't always know how to listen and cultivate awareness for the body. So for the six, here are some gifts that shift the attention from the anxiety of the mind to the wisdom of the body, as I'm mentioning. What does the wisdom of my body have to speak to me? It grounds the six in the present, helping him know and trust his body and ultimately himself, because trust is a big deal. Can I trust myself primarily is what the six is asking, because they're looking externally for authority to make feel sense of trust. But can I trust myself? And beginning to trust body helps the six begin to trust self. It helps the six take risks and experience courage in the face of uncertainty. Because if I say, hey, six, go move your body in some extemporaneous way, they don't know what's going to happen. So there's this sort of practice of, I don't really know what's going to happen, and can I take a risk and be uncertain and see what comes, what wisdom may come. So that's type six. And then the last one, type seven, talk for you, praying with limitation, fasting. So we're clearing away distractions that keep us from recognizing and receiving the grace and love of God. Now, fasting can be traditional. It can be like about food or some aspect of food, but it can be fasting from any kinds of things. It could be fasting from screens. This would be good for young people, in my opinion. I'm not one of them anymore. but what can we fast from, take a break from, create a limitation? Because remember, sevens don't like limitations. Offering the primacy of our relationship to God. In other words, I'm going to be, all the stuff or the things or the stimulation, that isn't what's primary. My relationship with God is primary. And so if I create a limit, that reminds me that this relationship is the primary thing. And sharing what we have with others to help bring justice. So this is part of fasting, traditional fasting practices. Whatever we don't engage in, we then take some of those resources and give them elsewhere. So if we don't eat, we take money or food and give it elsewhere. That's the traditional practice of fasting. All right? So for sevens, the gifts are, it helps the sevens stay with the pain / difficulty to discover the joy of the deeper self. So if I create a limit, there's actually a joy that can come. So I say to sevens this all the time, that if you engage, if you create limits, you actually find greater freedom. They don't believe me most of the time. They think I'm crazy. But limitations actually give us greater freedom. And so fasting or saying no to something actually helps us go deeper into the joy of who we are and gives us greater freedom. I don't want to fall. Encourages the seven to recognize her tendency toward gluttony. And gluttony isn't just about food, but gluttony is just like, I want a little taste of every little thing, right? But their tendency toward gluttony in order to avoid feeling difficult feelings. That's why sevens do that. They don't want to stay with what's painful or difficult because it scares them, and they don't want to be limited or trapped. And then invites the seven to look outward to the needs of others rather than focusing on herself. Sevens can be so self-focused. And if I take what I'm not engaging in and give it away, it helps me be focused toward the other. All right? So those are the seven practices. The nine practices for the seven, for the nine types. We're not going to do the welcoming prayer, but I want to say this last thing. The fruits of doing this, faith, hope, love. Right? It's true. You've heard those before, right? So, and actually, there's something in the Enneagram called holy ideas. And the holy idea for the six is faith, for the three is hope, and for the nine is love. And so these are body, heart, and head triads. Faith, hope, and love. These are some of the fruits that come from these kind of practices. A sense of peace, a sense of freedom, and deeper relationship with God. Yeah. So, I'm going to leave you there because I know people need to go, but I want to see if anybody has any questions. It is not, this actually has not come out in a book form yet. This book does, if you're interested, it does have, it has questions for each of the type to go deeper. So for example, I'll read, this is for type five. We have any fives in here? So here's an example of a question. When do you experience more than enough? When have you experienced abundance in your life? It helps kind of reflect and reframe, because the five's thinking, I don't have enough. Or why are you afraid to really ask for what you want? This would be a good question for the nine as well. So there's questions, there are prayers in here, there are quotes in here. If you're interested, you can let me know. Any other? Todd recommends, woohoo! Good.
And I also want to make a mention. I go back to our first
Yeah.
I was focusing on all the great things I did yesterday.
Great. Right, right. Beautiful. So Todd's saying it, when the examine practice, it was easy to go with the gift, the things that were energizing and fun and exciting, and harder to go with the difficulty. So the question for you and for all of us is, what can I learn from those hard parts? What do they have to teach me? What gifts and graces can come if I'm present with what's difficult? For example, do you have a question? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great, that's a beautiful one. It's just the seven may say, you may fast for 3 months and say, I'm not saying yes to one more thing. For 3 months. It is hard. It is hard, right? But that's a great example. That's a great example. Other questions? It would be great because you're focused, the motivation is slightly different because you're focusing on the needs of others, but you're absolutely right. Saying no would be good for you. Exactly. That's right. Other questions? I'm going to leave you with this. No, this is it. Yeah, I know. But I know. We lost one because of the air conditioning. And I'm not available next week. So. Yeah, I have some copies if you want one. They're $20 if you want to buy one. And I'm going to leave you this word from Rumi. Yeah. Oh, great, great. Here, just. So it's called the guest house. This connects great with the welcoming prayer. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of all its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. And so it is. Amen. Thank you for being here.